Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Good morning. Customer service, what does that mean to you? Well, we're going to talk about that today here on Driven to Business. Let me start off and approach that customer service topic from a bit of a different angle than you've done it before. Let me ask you this. What kind of a customer are you? Are you one of those kinds of guys that finds fault with everything the waitress brings out to you? You know, they didn't get your tea quick enough. The food's not exactly like you ordered, so you throw a big fit. Let me tell you, having been in the Coast Guard and been around cooks at one time, you don't ever want to make a cook mad, so that's a bad idea to let somebody walk out, to chew somebody out and let them walk out of your sight with your food. That's never a good idea, just from a health standpoint. But on top of that, what does it say about you? If you're running a business or a leader in a business, or you have a significant position in a business where you interact with customers, and most positions end up being like that, what does it say about the kind of service you're probably delivering if you are a terrible customer? I mean, think about that for a minute. Almost all customer service is based on the concept that both sides are exhibiting good faith. And, you know, we run into this at our company. When we get a complaint from a customer, I mean, we take it very seriously. So if a customer is not happy with us for any reason, we take that very seriously. We want to help that guy out, and we want to resolve the problem. But there are customers, and again, this may be a bit of a different approach to the subject of customer service. There are customers you cannot make happy because they're not dealing with you in good faith. Everything that we talk about today in regards to how to provide customer service, how to measure customer service, how to do all those things, is all based on the precept that both people are dealing in good faith with you. Now, fortunately, that's true in most instances. Most companies do not purposely give bad customer service. Most customers are fairly honest with the people they're doing business with. If they have a complaint with you, it's an actual complaint. And it may well be that the complaint is just a misunderstanding. But that's not being in bad faith. That's not acting in bad faith, even if they are complaining about something and they happen to be wrong about it. That's not bad faith. There is an old saying that we sometimes say at our company, and that is that you can never win an argument with a customer. You can just get rid of a customer. And that's been true for a long time. Let me tell you something. We're in a technology business at our company, EMA. You can find us at emainc.net, or you can just Google EMA drives, or pretty much Google anything having to do with medium voltage variable frequency drives, and you'll find us. We're all over the internet. We're well known in the company, and we're very technical people. We're technology driven, and the customers that we are, the vendors that we sell their variable frequency drives or their electronic gizmos, for those of you that don't know what that is, all of them will spend a lot of time telling us how great their equipment is. And you know what? They're right. Everything that we sell, that we represent, sell, and service, the equipment that we sell is very, very high-quality equipment. But you know what? Here's the sad thing is the equipment that our competitors sell is also very high-quality equipment. That's one thing that's happened in the technology business, the technology equipment business, is that there's very little bad equipment out there. So nobody is going to enjoy a technical or even a market advantage very long. You know, you may come out with something, you may be the first person in the market to come out with it. Think of Apple and the iPhone that came out with that. And you know, I always say it's so remarkable that Steve Jobs made us all begin manufacturing things we didn't even know we wanted, but now everybody wants them. Well, that's a great tribute to him and to the company there at Apple. But you know, anybody that thought everybody else was going to sit back and let Apple own the smartphone market was mistaken. Now, Apple still does a great job with that, but you'll notice there are a lot of other competitors out there now, Android and others. And so nobody is going to keep a technical or a market advantage very long. And here's another little thing for you to think about. It takes about five times as much. That's just as a general rule. It takes about five times as much money to find a new customer as it does to keep an existing one. So that's something to think about. It's important to keep customers that you're doing. I know back at a time when I was in sales and you with another company, and it seemed to me that the people doing the customer service side of our company were losing customers about as fast as I could bring them in. Well, that's very frustrating to everyone in the company. You can't just keep throwing customers in the top of the funnel if you keep if your company and your culture there continues to allow them to fall out the bottom after you get them in there, pretty soon you're not going to be in business. And for many people, the best prospects for increasing your business may well be your existing customers. So customer service does matter. It matters a great deal. You know, the thing you need to avoid being is complacent about customer service. You know, the average customer, your customer that deals with you, is not going to complain about getting bad service or even feeling like he's got the least bit of bad service and he's just going to go away. Think about yourself. There may be some of you out here that enjoy conflict. We call you psychopaths. But there are people that do enjoy that. Most people do not. Most of us don't like conflict. And if you get a bad meal in a restaurant, if you're not treated well in a store or something like that, generally what you do is you just don't go back there. Or even if you do go back there, you have to be talked into going back there. Well, that's not the way to run a business, so that you do that. A couple things can happen. A lot of consumers do not like it when somebody exhibits no urgency when they have a problem. We had an automobile breakdown yesterday, and I called my good friend, Paul Rockwell, who runs an automotive service out in Norcross. And Paul instantly on the phone was all over what the problem was. I felt the sense of urgency out of him that I had to get the car fixed. Well, your customers need to feel that. They need to feel that you understand the problem they're having and that you're going to do something about it. Don't be complacent about it with all. Not showing any urgency or not being available. I realize that many of you use these automated phone answering services. Ask anybody if they like those. And you're not going to, if you find one person out of 50 that says they like that, it'll amaze me. Maybe in your situation, that's all you can do. I mean, perhaps you're in a situation where that is the only option you have. And if that's so, fine. Make it as good as you know how to make it. But most of us are not in that situation. Have a person, a friendly person, answer the phone. Even if all they can say is, take their name and number and say, I will have Mr. So-and-so call you back, and Mr. So-and-so has got to call them back when they say that. But be available to your customers right there. And the other thing is, when people have a question, when they have something to ask you about, don't stall on it. If you tell somebody you're going to call them back this afternoon, call them back. Everybody has been through this with all sorts of businesses where you called, you got a friendly voice on the phone, they were very nice to you, and they said, oh, we'll be back with you with that information this afternoon. And they never called you back. And you wait till about 5 to 5 and you call them back and you get an answering machine. They're not there. What did you feel like? You felt mad about that. Well, that's what your customers feel too when you don't do that. So let's all understand the importance of customer service and let's go about doing a better job with it. There is a big movement today that says customer service is in fact the new marketing. We interviewed George Wendt. I've mentioned this before on our program back some time ago. And George had hired, George runs Oars, O-A-R-S. You can find him at oars.com. They run a beautiful website. They run an outdoor adventure rafting company. Sounds like a fun way to make a living. And he's kind of a fun guy, and I think it is a fun way to make a living. But something very interesting he told me during the program. George had hired a marketing consultant to help him figure out what he could do to increase this very unique and esoteric business that he has. And the marketing consultant did a lot of research. And what George expected her to do was to come back and give him a very defined media package and you know, here's what you need to do, and here's what we need to do to your literature, here's what we need to do to your website, we need to do this, we need to do that, all these great marketing ideas. And after this very talented marketing research person finished looking at his company, what she came back and said, now she did have all those things to do. There were some of those to do. But she told him the number one thing he could do to increase his business was to just be certain that the people that went on his trips enjoyed the trip. Because what they're going to do is go back and talk about it, and then they're going to bring other people. And that is his best source of customers. And he says that they do that. And, you know, I'm an example of that. I've been 3 times with him now. And most of the people that I was with on the rafting trips, I've been with him before, and we all tell our friends, and that's the best advertising you can buy. It's the best thing you can do is have people that like doing business with you to get around and do the best job you can do so that the people that are your customers actually become your fans. It's a great idea if you have customers that are your fans. And you can think of some people like that. There's a few companies I really do like dealing with. I like dealing with Amazon. Amazon does not advertise on the program here. I don't get any kickback from them. But when I deal with Amazon, I always get handled. And you know, Amazon's a high technology company. You do it all over the web. However, you know, the stuff shows up the next day. It always shows up like it is. If you do have a problem, they are right on the spot to take it back. So you feel like they've done a good job for you, and then you tell other people. And that's a big story of their success. As I said, all of our discussions, we're going to get into some details here later in the program, all of our discussions are going to operate under the assumption that the majority of businesses do intend to provide good service to their customers. I would think most of you listening that are in leadership positions in business, you don't get up in the morning and say, today I think I'm going to give poor service to my customers. You never say that. And further, we assume that most companies operate within an ethical framework whereby they're not intentionally defrauding their customers. Now, we all know there are people around that are crooks, but fortunately for us, they're rare. In fact, it's a basic foundation of American society and certainly American business that we have an ethical framework undergirding business where if I do a business deal with you, if you and I are you want to sell your lawnmower and I'm your neighbor and I come over and we talk about the lawnmower and you say, okay, I'll sell you this lawnmower for $200 and I say, well, I'll give you $150 for it. And you say, okay. And we shake hands and make a deal. There is an assumption by both of us that, number one, I'm going to give you $150. And number two, when I get the lawnmower from you, it's going to be in the shape you set it in. You're not going to take the wheels off the lawnmower and give it to me and then say, well, you didn't say the wheels. That's unethical. And without that ethical framework, business can't exist. You can't always have a lawyer running around cleaning up everything. So when we talk about customer service, we do talk in that framework that there's an ethical framework surrounding the customer service and that we intend to provide good customer service. More in the program as we go along with that. By the way, we are streaming live all over the world on biz1190.com. Today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com, and I continue to hear people that hear the podcast and just find it on iTunes and everything else. I don't understand how it even gets there, but it does. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. More customer service in a minute. Hang around. Welcome back to Driven to Business. We're here every Saturday morning right here on Atlanta's Biz 1190. We're glad you're here. Tell your friends. Hey, we're talking about customer service today. I want to give you a little background of something that sort of influenced me and my thinking about customer service. Back in the early 80s, I read a book by a guy named Jan, it's spelled J-A-N, pronounced Jan Carlson. Jan at that time was the president of SAS Airlines. At that time, I think he was the youngest airline president in the world. At that time. And when he took it over, the airline was in complete disarray. Now, he ended up writing a book about his experiences later called Moments of Truth. You can still find that. The book's been a seminal book in not only my thinking, but in many ways, it was the basis for a lot of things that followed that, like the quality movement that followed. Almost all of that, if you go back and look, shot out of that book. And there were a lot of books that sprang out of that, In Search of Excellence and many other books that came out of that. But when he took over SAS Airlines, the airline was in terrible condition. Their revenues were dropping dangerously. They were losing customers. Morale was very poor, and bankruptcy of the company was a very real possibility back in those times. Now, after Carlson left, the SAS did find themselves in a lot of problems after he left in a whole different era. But when he was there, he went there, and it was a terrible idea. Carlson, a young man, after brainstorming with some others within his company, he got an idea. And it's not a particularly profound idea, but at the same time, it was a very practical idea that no one had really come up with or had voiced before. What he came up with is that every time any customer had any kind of an interaction with SAS Airlines, whether they saw one of their trucks driving down the road or whether they call them on the phone, this is before web days, or they flew on one of their planes, any interaction they had with him, Carlson decided those were what he called moments of truth, which is the title of the book. And those moments of truth, you could either make a good impression or a bad impression during those moments of proof. And what he had decided was, instead of just letting them be happenstance, he would try to manage those moments of truth and make them positive for the customer. And so he began examining the various moments of truth, and he reached a conclusion that many of those incidents that happened were with lower echelon employees, not managers. And from this came what at that time was a very unique idea in business of pushing decision-making and pushing authority downward, giving gate agents, for instance, the necessary authority to satisfy an unhappy customer right there at the gate without them having to go call a manager, make the flight mad or not make the flight because of some problem with the flight and go home mad and maybe call a manager and maybe a month later get some sort of restitution for it. He gave the airline, he gave the ticket agents right there the authority to do a lot of things they couldn't do before. That had a very positive effect on the passenger opinions of SAS, and what I think surprised Carlson and many others, it had a very, very positive effect on the morale of his employees, who now felt empowered to offer good customer service. One of the concerns that he had was late departures. And if you've ever flown or not, you know how annoying that is. And he found, when he began looking at it, that SAS very often left late. And that moment of truth exasperated the business passengers they needed so badly to be profitable as an airline. So he came up with a very simple but brilliant idea. He simply installed a computer screen in his office that noted the scheduled and the actual departure times of every jet during the day in real time. And when Carlson would see that a jet left late, he would make a phone call to the cockpit of the airplane while it was in the air, talk to either the captain or the co-captain, and ask them, why did you leave late? Well, I don't know all the reasons they came up with, but something rather amazing happened. Their late departure times disappeared because once it got around that the president of the airline is going to call you if you're late, well, then the pilots, of course, are pushing the gate agents, and the gate agents are pushing each other. I mean, they're going to get this thing out of here on time because, and again, it's a great truth in the business. Just simply setting standards and letting people know you're serious about those customer service standards. Carlson's idea, this moment of truth, is really the rationale behind all customer service. And as I said earlier, in modern American business, holding a technical advantage over a competitor is rare. And even if it exists, if you have something technical, it's going to be very short-lived because technology advances very quickly. We're in a global market now. There are really very few technical secrets, as we all know, either through legit or illegitimate means. They're going to end up being copied, and their people are going to have other ways of getting that technology. So the advantage you've got to have is in the customer service area. Now, I came up with some myths of customer service I'd like to talk to you about for a minute. Here's number one. Number one myth of customer service is that good intentions result in good customer service. It's just not true. You can intend to give good customer service, but you've got to have more than intentions. You've got to have a culture and a system that allows you to give good customer service. Very few people intentionally give bad service. Almost no one does. And there are some people that are more intuitive about this than others. I mean, you will have people in your company, and perhaps you're one of those, or perhaps you're not one of those, who is just not intuitive about customer service. But any organization that trusts exclusively in the intuition of their employees is going to have a problem. You need to build a customer service culture and standards and do that in a way that even a person that's not particularly intuitive about customer service will offer consistent good service just by following your company's standards. And a company's structure and procedures can make good customer service impossible. And see, that's what Jan Carlson found at SAS. Was that the gate agents weren't intentionally making people unhappy. They just didn't have the authority to do anything about it. So again, good intentions result in good customer service. It's not true. Do you need good intentions? Of course, but you need more. Put a system in place for that. Here's a couple more before the break. Customer service is unrelated to profitability. That's something that escapes a lot of people that are not particularly business-minded. But you know what? If you're going to provide good customer service, you're going to have to make a profit doing it, or you're not going to provide it very long. Sometimes people will say, what's the primary purpose of being in business? And they'll get a little annoyed when I'll tell them it's to make a profit. They say, no. The in business, the purpose is to provide customer service, or it's to provide jobs for your employees. And they come up with all these great thoughts. And I always tell them, well, that's really good, but tell me how you're going to do any of that without profits. You're not going to be around. So every business has to make a profit. Here in Atlanta, I was a customer of a company that existed some time ago, and some of you may have been, called WebVan. WebVan was an awesome company. It delivered groceries to your home. You could go online and order them. They were delivered at specific times and by very talented and customer-oriented people. They had on uniforms. They were friendly. They were great customer service. The price was almost the same thing you'd buy it at Kroger or Publix. And it was like, this would be a great deal. We used the service. It was fantastic. But they crashed. They went out of business. And why? Well, because they simply could not, it turned out, they could not deliver those services at a profit. Well, again, you've got to look at that. I had a good friend out in California. He passed away some years ago. And he had a service company like ours. And he had a young employee there that was telling him they had a hiccup with a customer and they were taking care of the customer. They did everything, made the guy happy. And this young man was saying, we need to give them all their money back on this job, even though we've done a repair and it's in the equipment, it's out in the plant now and the equipment's running. We need to give them all their money back because we messed up. And my buddy listened to that a bit, and then he asked the guy, I said, look, here's what we'll do. It was about a $3,000 job. He said, here's what we'll do. He said, I'll pay $1,500, and then we'll pay $1,500 out of your pocket. And the young guy said, you know, of course, started backing off on that. Wait a minute. He said, well, you know, you're perfectly happy to give my money away, but you're not willing to give your own. I think it is important to let your employees and the folks in your company understand you have to make a profit. It doesn't mean you cheat anybody. It doesn't mean you don't do a great job, and you should do all that, but you do have to make a profit. You've got to charge a fair price and a reasonable price for your business. I'm sometimes amazed to hear that airlines and airplanes are flying full, and I'll hear they're losing money. And I'm like, wait a minute. If you're flying full and losing money, isn't that a problem with your business model there? If you've got a hotel or something and every room's full and you're losing money, you need to look at your business model. Something's wrong with your pricing or your cost structure or something. You're listening to Driven to Business, customer service show today. Stick around. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Back in a minute. Welcome back to Driven to Business. We're talking about customer service today. I hope I'm sounding excited enough to you, because we are excited about customer service at our company. By the way, you know, we measure customer service. I'm going to talk to you about that in a minute. We actually measure customer service at our company. It's something I began doing a long time ago, and I'm going to tell you a story about that, because when we first started doing it, the results were disappointing. And if you were to do it, what would yours be? I don't know, but you need to find out, because it's something you need to know. This is not the kind of you don't want a pie in the sky idea that, you know, oh, everything's fine because we haven't had a lot of complaints. Well, that's my next point. I was going to tell you, complaints are, this is a myth, that complaints are a good indicator of customer satisfaction. They absolutely are not. Customers do not complain. They just go away. I'm not a person that enjoys confrontation, although I will do it when necessary. But I rarely complain about bad service. I generally just won't go there again. If I go to a restaurant and I don't like the food, I'm probably not going to harass the waiter or the cook or the manager or anybody else. I'm just not going back there. That's what's going to happen. And if I'm in a hardware store and I get annoyed in the hardware store, I'm probably not going to yell at anybody in there. I'm just not going back to that hardware store. And a lot of you, in fact, research indicates the vast majority of you are the same way. You're just going to go away, and your customers are that way too. And so the fact that they're not complaining doesn't mean anything whatsoever. They just go away. And you know, there's a difference between being not unhappy and being very satisfied. That's a big difference. You can be, yeah, okay, that wasn't too bad. Well, that's fine. That's great that your customers say that, but wouldn't it be better if they said, boy, that was awesome? I mean, that's what you really want, is people to say it was a really great experience for you, and that's what you need to measure for. So complaints are not a good indication of customer satisfaction. As we have time later on, I'll talk to you about how we ended up measuring that for our company at EMA. Here's another myth for you. All customers are equal. It's a dangerous myth. because it can actually force you out of business. And it's something that a lot of folks don't intuitively pick up on. All customers should be treated fairly and respectfully. And any commitment you make to any customer needs to be kept. But customers are not equally valuable to a business. If 80% of your business comes from 20% of your customers, you had better be taking good care of that 20%. And you normally will not have the resources to take the exact same care of the remaining 80%. Think of, again, I used airlines a while ago for an example. I don't think airlines, generally speaking, I heard Warren Buffett say one time that strictly from an investor standpoint, it'd been better if Orville had crashed. I'm not sure everyone would agree with that, but airlines have not been the best businesses in the world. I think if you ever invested in them, you'll generally understand that. However, they do, you know, what airlines do is they try to reward their frequent flyers and treat them better. You know, give them the upgrades in the seats. Do that to you. It's the people that are there frequently, and that's a great concept. The idea that you take your best customers and you treat them well. You don't treat them bad, and you should regularly survey your customers to ascertain those levels to see what they're like. And on top of that, look at where your business comes from and take care of that 20%. You normally are not going to have the resources to take care of the rest of them. Here's another one to think about. This is a myth. Customer service is a management-only responsibility. It absolutely is not. And, you know, if you work in a business, you may be thinking that's your boss's job to be sure the company is providing good customer service. It's absolutely not. And if you are a leader in a business, you need to make sure that within that business there's a culture of customer service. Now, it's going to start by what you're like. If you're the kind of person that does not give good customer service, it's going to filter right down through the company. But management does have to be intimately involved with and fully support customer service. But it's going to fall apart unless there's a culture of customer service that's pervasive throughout all levels of the organization. One of the things when I'm around, and we've had several interviews here of companies that have had great customer service, and one of the things I always ask them, because I'm always curious, tell us how you built that culture of customer service there. I started off saying that in the beginning here about that, the idea that you have got to set some standards. Good intentions won't do it. Set standards up as to what that should look like. Let me tell you, let me give a few standards, give some ideas of that. Every business should really have, you and your employees should know what are your standards of customer service. And why is that? It's because, number one, writing the standards forces you to think of yourselves from your customer's point of view. And those standards are very often going to be the first step in building a culture of customer service, and it gives you a minimum against which you can actually measure your customer service success, which, again, is something you need to do. Here's a couple of examples of just some standards perhaps you could have in your business, and that is that all customer inquiries are to be answered within, and you give it a time frame, depending on your business. Maybe that's 10 minutes is reasonable. In a business like ours, a couple of hours, because we're dealing with very technical things, a couple of hours. Standards like that, all orders will be shipped on the day they are received. A standard that we take very seriously at our company, all customers with a late order will be called as soon as we know that order is going to be late. Let me tell you something, a little rule you can just put in the back of your head and keep it there. Bad news, where customers are concerned in customer service, bad news does not improve with age. The longer you wait to give a customer bad news, the worse it's going to sound, not the better. Do it as soon as you can. And that's a hard call to make sometimes when you know the guy's going to be angry at you. But let me tell you, he's not going to be any less angry tomorrow. He's going to be a lot more angry. Call him the second you find out. And again, it has to do with your credibility, building your credibility with the guy that you're an honest business person he can trust and deal with, and you're giving him a straight story. Customers can take bad news. They can take bad news. What they cannot take is no news. Give the guy the bad news. Give it to him right up front. Be courteous about it, but give it to him. It also may be that with your company and within your company and your culture, it may well be that you need a different set of standards for your top customers. Like, for instance, a company I worked with one time had a standard that you are to be on a first-name basis. I'm talking about if you're in charge of a customer service area. You're to be on a first-name basis with the primary decision-maker in that company. In other words, if you do business with a company and the decision maker's name is Tom, you're to know his name is Tom, And you need to know something about him. And the second thing is we had as a standard is you are to recognize, they are to recognize your voice on the phone. When you call them, they're to know who you are when they hear you on the phone. They don't have to, they talk to you that often. And call and thank them every month. Now, maybe you can do that. If you have only a few customers, maybe you can do that for everybody. But if you're like some businesses and you have thousands of customers, it may be that you cannot call every one of those thousand customers. But you can call your top ones. The ones that's really going to hurt if they go away. You can call and thank them every month. Who ever got mad at anybody calling and say, hey, this is I just want to call and tell you thanks for your business last week, and that's all I want to call you about. And thanks for your business, and I'll see you again next month. I mean, nobody gets annoyed by that. Those, again, are the kind of standards you can have in a company that perhaps will help you deliver better customer service. Let me tell you something else. There's a customer service myth, and that's that companies have no control over customer expectations. Underpromise and overdeliver has been the philosophy of a number of successful companies. Back in the early 80s, back when people were still repairing computers, and there may be some companies still around repairing computers. I'm not knocking you, but you know that's not the business it was at one time for sure, because there was a time back when computers were very, very expensive. And instead of buying a new computer, you would actually have it repaired. There were companies all over Atlanta here in field service trucks running around repairing computers. There were large companies that did that, Hewlett-Packard and Texas Instruments and many others that had large field service operations around here doing that. Well, those days are not anymore. But back in those days, there was a survey done of the customers of a computer field service company, and their customers were rated as very satisfied with the customer's average response time, which was 3 hours. And there was another major company, I'm not going to name you the company, another major company's customers, however, were very dissatisfied with their field service response time. And guess what it averaged? 3 hours. Exact same customer base, exact same response time. One set of customers registered as very dissatisfied with the response time. The other one, getting the exact same response time, registered very happy. Now, what went on here? Were the happy ones just not as smart as the others? No, it was a dilemma the investigator. This actually was a college graduate project, and what he found was that the company who had the unhappy customers, they actually promised 2 hour service, and they averaged 3 hours. The first company, the people with the happy customers, promised 4 hour response and averaged 3. Same general marketplace. Identical services, the first company just managed their expectations better. Now, almost no one these days may be making any money on computer field service. Again, if you are out there, great. Keep it up. But the principle of managed expectations is still good. You need to overpromise. Excuse me, I said exactly wrong. You need to underpromise and overdeliver. Do not do the other. People don't like it when they're told things that are not going to happen to you. You know, much or a lot of the customer service plan is rote functions, such as, call the customer and tell him his equipment shipped and call him immediately if it'll be late and so forth. And simply following those rote functions, I mean, it's not much more difficult than that, will put you miles ahead of where you'll be without them. But if you really, really want to brighten up your customer service, start being careful of the people you hire and hire somebody with people-pleasing personalities and someone that everybody enjoys talking to and turn that person loose on your customers. Remember, almost nobody enjoys a competitive advantage in regards to technology, systems, or location, at least not very long. And the thing that your competitors will have the hardest time overcoming is a personal relationship you build with your customers. Now, that's one thing our company does both shop repairs of electronic, industrial electronic equipment, and we do a lot of field service. What we found over the years is that we build a much better relationship and a much tighter relationship with our field service customers. And, you know, that's completely logical if you think about it. In field service, you actually have people going out there in their plants. They build customer relationships with those people. They build relationships. They know each other on a first name basis. They get to talk about ball games and about their kids and about everything else. Those kind of relationships are harder to break. And so when a competitor comes in to try and take your customer, and you have got that kind of momentum with a customer, that kind of relationship, That's just a harder customer for them to take away from you. You're listening to Driven to Business. This is Customer Service Day. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Back in a minute. Welcome back to Driven to Business. Today's program, I hope you're enjoying it, is about customer service. You know, there's no, I don't have a magic wand on that any more than you do. And in fact, even defining customer service, you get that from different people. But basically, it's that you were happy when you left there. And that's really not a lot more than that. Some of you are in very, very, very difficult businesses. Some businesses are harder than others to provide good customer service. That's just something we have to recognize because it's perhaps very technical, are very difficult, or you're in an extremely competitive marketplace where perhaps it's very price competitive and prices have been beat down to where it's hard to do it. It just means you have to try harder at it, because even if you're in a very price competitive business, what's going to happen is customer service is going to be your edge. Those relationships you build, customer service, the fact that people are happy with you. I'm going to tell you a little bit of story about us at EMA. This was actually written up in a magazine some years ago. Back a number of years ago, I just had the uneasy feeling that we were missing the boat somehow with our customers. We were having a fair amount of customer attrition. Now, some customer attrition is a fact of life. You can't get away from it, which is why you do need sales and marketing going on. You're going to lose customers no matter what you do. People are going to die off. They're going to move. New technology is going to come in. They're going to get different management, whatever. I mean, at some point, no matter what you do, how good a job you do, there will be times you will lose customers. So you're going to have to always be doing sales. But it's a lot, as we said in the beginning of the program here, it costs a lot more money to get a new customer than it does to keep an old one. So do what you can to keep the old ones. Well, I just had an uneasy feeling in our company that we're losing customers, and I thought we were doing a very good job technically, I had grown up out of the field service world, and so I knew that we were doing a very good job technically, and we were, when someone called us into their plant or something, when we left there, the equipment was running, and it was running right and tuned properly, and so I thought, okay, that's sort of the techie hat I had on, everything should be fine there. So when we did. But we were just losing some customers. And so I began doing a survey. We set up a fairly scientific survey of our customers. And we asked them a number of questions, but only one of them I really cared about. We had a question at the end that was, in your last experience with EMA, were you somewhat satisfied or dissatisfied? You kind of ramp it up. Either you were a little bit satisfied, not very satisfied, you were a lot dissatisfied, or you were kind of satisfied, or the top one was you were very satisfied. And we found to our dismay that only 73% of our customers, this was almost 20 years ago, 73% of our customers said they were very satisfied with their last experience with us. And that was very disheartening to me to look at. Because, I mean, we were repairing things. We left there. The equipment's running. What's the problem? Was sort of my angle on that. So we began burrowing down into those numbers to try and find out, and I got some other outside people to help me with this, to find out what that was. And what I found out, it was not in our company, it was not a high-tech issue, it was a high-touch issue. We were not returning phone calls very well. We were, if something were late, and it may be a very legitimate reason it was late, the part didn't get in, or in field service, many times you can get stuck on a job you intended on finishing at 5 the day you don't get finished, and so you have to go back there the next day, which means the next customer gets pushed down a bit. That was all fine. You can't help that, but we were not calling the person and telling them that. And as silly as that may sound, that was killing our response rate. So we began to deal with those soft touch side, those high touch, I guess would be the correct word, side of the equation. And we began to work very hard on it. We actually hired some people. We spent a lot of money in putting together some databases that would allow us to track what we were doing very carefully and make sure that we were feeding information back to our customers. Not everything we tried worked. We went in a lot of blind alleys here, back and forth. But in the end, when we finally began to put this through the company, we ended up where now, when we survey now, we still do this. We still do the survey very regularly with our customers. We found that far in excess of 98%. I've actually had survey cycles where we've had 100%, but we don't advertise that because, you know, nothing can stay 100%. But we advertise between 98 and 99% of our customers say they were very satisfied with us. Now, I could use that in a way to brag on our company, EMA, and we do brag on our company a lot, the sponsor of the program here. But I say that to you to say that what we did at our company, you can do at yours. It's a matter of attacking the problem. And the first thing is, I strongly urge you, if you're having an issue with this at all, if you suspect you're having an issue, is to begin surveying your customers. If you need help putting a survey together, get some outside help, but do it very honestly and carefully and as unemotionally as you can. Look at those results. And be prepared to be a little perhaps insulted by the results of it. The fact that you think you're doing a great job, the customer may not think that. Now, if they do think you are, fantastic. It reinforces what you're doing already. But if they're not, well, then look below it and try to find out what it is. You're going to find, like we did, it's probably culture. And it's probably some simple things you can do. We began, again, publishing our own customer service standards. We began, in our company, we talk about it constantly. And I'll tell you what, our employees are very proud of the fact that we have good customer service. Again, that's part of a culture you begin to build where this is what we do. We do good customer service. We do better customer service than anybody. And once your employees start telling customers that and are enthusiastic about your company, well, things get so much better when that starts happening. So I would encourage you to make the surveys, and once you do the survey, look hard at it to try and come up with why they were not happy with you. Again, some simple things you can do. Be sure you are, in fact, calling customers. They're not having to call you to hear bad news. If you've got bad news, that needs to come from you. It is not, you know, if you promise to ship a customer something today and he calls you in 2 days and wants to know when it's going to ship, don't tell him then it didn't ship 2 days ago. Call him the day it was supposed to ship, and as soon as you find out it's not going to ship for whatever reason, call him up. If you make a mistake, go right to the guy and explain and admit it. Don't make a bunch of excuses about it. Just admit the mistake. You'll be surprised how forgiving customers are when you treat them in that way. And let me close with today. I've helped a lot of people start businesses. I have them call me sometimes with an idea they have for a business. And I always tell them, we have this customer service talk about the idea you've got to treat people well with customers. But let me tell you, this is just, and this may or may not apply to any of you in your business now, or and some of you that started businesses might can relate to this. You know, it's very easy to do what I call spend too much time on the furniture when you're getting a business started. You know, you want to start a business, you're very excited about it, so you go out and you rent a little business place, or you make a home office, or however you're going to do it. And then you spend days and days and days coming up with what the furniture is going to look like in there, and getting your computer set up, and making sure you got the exact software you need, and making sure it's all your phone system's exactly the way you want it, and all these kinds of things are going on. And the problem is, I'll normally ask people like that, say, well, what are you going to do next week after you've done this week? And if their answer doesn't have something to do with getting customers, I usually, as their friend, try to warn them about that and say, you know, you need to drop all the concern about the furniture here for a bit and concentrate on getting some customers, because, you know, people will do business in places with bad furniture if you're offering a good service and you know, you're a good company. But if they don't know about you, if they don't know you're in business, there nothing's going to happen with that. So my observations of people's behavior, both of myself and of others, substantiates the idea that many of us will do almost anything given the chance other than what we should be doing in business. And what we should be doing in business is providing good customer service, and even before that, you can't provide good customer service if you don't have a customer. So go out and find customers and be happy about it. I hope you've enjoyed today's program, a little different today about customer service. You can contact us through eddiemayfield.com. Today's program will be podcast, by the way, on eddiemayfield.com. After the program, we're always streaming live here at biz1190.com. We're here every Saturday morning at the best business radio station in Atlanta, WAFS Biz 1190. Always glad to see you. See you next week.